The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that is right. The Survivor Know-It-Alls are back here after episode number 2 of The Edge of Extinction.
And what a choice. What a crazy choice Keith is left with. Does he play Survivor or does he quit Survivor? What a cliffhanger.
Okay, we have a real cliffhanger on our hands.
Is it a real cliffhanger? Here, I'm curious. I want to analyze if this is a real cliffhanger because, I mean, it seems to be some kind of hanger.
A little bit of a cliffhanger. We're left with the decision tonight of whether or not Keith is going to join Reem on Extinction Island, Stephen Fishback. What do you think?
I mean, I'm trying to like figure out, like, is there any way he doesn't take it? Like, what is the scenario where Keith doesn't take it? And question, do they leave us with the cliffhanger if he doesn't take it? Because, like, wouldn't that be like a crazy way to end the episode with him not taking it?
Right. I would say that I think it's very unlikely he doesn't go. But, yeah, you know, can I paint the scenario where he doesn't go? Yeah, he's 19. You can't predict what a 19-year-old will do at any given moment.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and it's such an emotional thing he's just gone through. I mean, to be voted out of Survivor, you're like in this like blackout state, you know? I mean, I think that, like, and we're all like, yeah, and when we're all like joking about what, oh my God, look at this guy, how is this a decision at all? Like, just like think about it, like his mental state at that moment. Like, I've been voted out of Survivor, Rob. You've been voted out of Survivor many, many years ago when you played. But you know, you're just like in this total, like, you're totally spaced out. Like, many people don't even remember the experience. You know, they don't remember the walk out of Tribal Council. So, you know, imagine that, and then you're confronted with something that feels like a choice, even if it's not really a choice. You know, suddenly your like whole brain explodes.
Mm-hmm. Look, I think it's probably 99% he's going to go to Extinction Island, right?
Yeah. No, I think he's going to join Reem.
My thought on it is that he might be the only person who really ends up looking at that and is like, what do I do? I got a decision to make. Right. Where every other person is like, back in the game. Okay, let me get right on the boat.
But it's probably just shocking, you know, because like, yeah, I mean, he had like, this is his reaction. Like, that, it's just like such an incredible, strange thing that it has to be real, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll talk about everything going on tonight and much more. I really enjoyed this episode. The second episode of a Survivor season, I think, is underrated because you like had the load in already in the premiere, and then you never get a reward challenge, which I don't love. I don't love reward challenges. So you're going to get an episode, and it's a lot of camp life in a second episode of Survivor. I think a second episode of Survivor is a very underrated thing.
How much of Survivor, though, especially this second episode, is now driven by the contestants' desire to make gifts? Oh, there's a camera 5 feet away. I didn't even notice while I was doing my wacky dance.
You think Ron Clark is looking for gifts, Steven?
Ron Clark is like a viral star, right? Didn't he? I mean, all of them, they're all thinking like, what's my wacky gif for the wacky dance? It's not just Ron. I don't want to call any one person out. I'm calling out a culture of gif making.
What's your wacky gif?
I mean, that's the problem. That's why I'm like old school Survivor. I was not ready.
Stephen Fishback gif. If I look,
it's probably hitting the wrong target in the slingshot.
Is it
challenge.
That or is it you crying?
If Dalton Ross is seeding the
Stephen
search results.
Survivor. Yeah. Let's just see if there's a top one that comes up. Let's have to see.
Yeah. This is the one that I get a lot. Is it's like just me at my first season. just turning around, smiling, and giving the thumbs up after I won the chicken hearts in the Survivor
Auction.
Yeah,
so tweet me the number one Stephen Fishback.
That's really not necessary. We don't need to go down that road.
But at least we're on the same page of GIF versus GIF, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. So we're off to a good start. We're already in agreement. Already in agreement about everything going on here. So a lot to do here tonight. Of course, tomorrow morning, Stephen, I'm going to talk to another one of your friends. This is like I'm going through. This is your life, because last week I talked to Kimmy Kappenberg. Today tomorrow morning I'm talking to another one of your great friends, Mr. Coach.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah. First time in a long time since I had Coach as the recap guest. Going to talk to Coach tomorrow morning. Going to have Lyrsa on the voicemails this week as well. So should be a very fun week of Survivor recap, Stephen Fishback.
Yeah, Coach, great person to ask about the captain scenario. I'm very curious to hear.
That's why I thought to reach out to him. I said, okay, we'll talk about this. So what is it like, you know, how do you wrangle these first-time players when you're a three-timer?
You should try to get one of the because Coach was like a pretty successful captain. You need like Russ Swan.
Well, we're going to talk to him at our live show this season. So we'll be able to get a chance.
Really?
To
ask him. Of course. Yeah. The Philly community. That's awesome. That's so exciting. I forgot about that.
We're going to cover this from all the angles, Stephen. All right. So, of course, hashtag RHJP to get your questions into the show when we will hear what the listeners have to say, like we do every single week, Stephen.
Yeah. And I agree. I really like this. You know, my problem with, as I've mentioned, but I will continue talking about my problems with the returnee, the captain season, is that the new players end up being defined by their relationship to the vets. So it's, you know, we learn a lot about, are they on team newbie or are they on team vet? You know, you've got Eric and Gavin, who like they want to take out Aubrey and Joe. Meanwhile, you have Lauren, and she's, you know, wants to be Wentworth's best friend. But what I thought was a really fun wrinkle was focusing it on the vet's perspective of, holy crap, these newbies are coming for me. And what does Aubrey do in that situation? Apparently not the right thing, but it was interesting.
Yeah. As we continue this dialogue here tonight. Yeah. I thought that this season is shaping up to be very interesting for me, because that we're seeing the veterans seem to be struggling, where the new players seem united in that, we're not having it. We're not just going to roll over and die and follow the veterans. And we saw that in both the camps that the players were talking about this, that we're not just going to go after. And it really did feel like that the threat level for Kelly Wentworth was real. Do you feel like that we were sold a bill of goods, Stephen? Was Kelly Wentworth really on the hot seat tonight?
I mean, it sure looked like it. I'm curious to talk to you about David's decision to target her, because I see both sides, you know, and I'm curious. I really am. I want to talk through it with you.
Let's do it.
Because whatever you say, I know is wrong. So I'll go with the opposite perspective.
Come on, Stephen. I think it's really interesting that David Wright says, I am totally on board with a blind side of Kelly Wentworth. Right. I feel like that I come down more on the War Dog side of things, that I think it's too premature. And I liked where War Dog was coming from. I'm not sure if it's War Dog or the War Dog either. He referred to himself as the War Dog, so I feel like that's probably correct. So what are you, you're cleaning the camera in the middle?
Yeah, it's real blurry. I think I smudged it.
That was very surreal. But so the War Dog says, look, Kelly is not, we're not going to take our eyes off her. We know where she is. She's a shield in front of us. We're going to keep her out in front, and she's always going to be a bigger target than we are in the game. So let's keep Kelly Wentworth around. It's short-sighted. David is coming at it as that, I know Kelly Wentworth doesn't want to work with me, so it's like a prisoner's dilemma for David, of that Kelly isn't coming for me now, but I need to come for her now before she's coming for me.
I think there's that element of like, he's got to get Kelly out first. I also want to make the argument that David has done a really great job of kind of just fading back and integrating himself into the tribe, you know, in a way that seems like he's got his really solid relationship with Rick, right? He's got his main ally, but he's also in a lot, like most conversations are happening with him or around him. People are coming to him. You know, you see him in all these, in all these conversations, agreeing to things. I think David's game is served by not having Kelly there because, yeah, granted, it makes him a bigger target on the one hand, but on the other hand, it also makes, there's less of like a threat. There's less of a threat of like the returnees if there are fewer returnees, you know? He has a chance to just be David if he's the only returnee there. When there are four returnees in the game, they're a group and they're scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I think it's fascinating to think about it. And I think it's also very interesting that we, I don't even think we saw tonight a conversation between David and Kelly. What are they talking about when they get to, when they get together? And I thought it was really interesting at the tribal council where there was a lot of talk about, is there a blind side? Is there going to be a blind side tonight? Everybody was in agreement about there being a blind side. So what, like it ended up being a blind side of Keith. I think that he thought it was going to be a blind side of Kelly, but was Kelly under the impression that, hey, Keith thinks we're blindsiding you tonight?
I would imagine so. Right. I mean, I think that she clearly, these votes that, you know, my guess is that they all sort of, they all sort of got on the same page. Right. And I think you can tell that largely because of the Wendy vote, right? Mm-hmm. The Wendy vote is the, we're just going to cast one vote for Wendy just to make sure in case by some fluke chance Keith has an idol. So given that Wendy vote, my thought is the whole tribe kind of got on the same page about let's get rid of Keith. You know, some people were doing it because they thought Keith was a weak challenge performer. Some people were doing it because they just didn't have traction for a different plan. But, you know, I think that was sort of the overall tribe consensus.
So if you're David and now there's all this talk that you are on board with this plan to take out Kelly Wentworth, and then you did not take out Kelly Wentworth, isn't that really dangerous? Isn't that really dangerous that a lot of people, Chris knows about this plan, War Dog knows about this plan, that isn't that there's a very high danger of detection that word is going to get back to Kelly Wentworth about this?
But it's all people who already want her out. Like, why would the people who are plotting to take her out go tell her that their people plot? I mean, you know, this is the danger always on Survivor, mm-hmm. right? Is that your plan is going to get back to the person that you're plotting against. But I think David has like pretty good plausible deniability here, you know, and that's what's so awesome is that he didn't approach anyone about this plan, right? People keep coming to him. And then it's like he says in this confessional, this plan is going to happen without me having to even do anything, mm-hmm. where Wendy comes to him and pitches voting out Wentworth. Chris comes to him and pitches voting out Wentworth. You know, he doesn't really need to go into the driver's seat. He just needs to kind of agree.
Stephen, what do you think? You've played with Kelly Wentworth. Do you think that if you were coming at it from David's position, do you think that that's the right move to take out Kelly?
Well, I mean, that's what I was saying earlier.
On this vote.
I think what is happening is perfect for David, right? Where Kelly is a target. People are talking about taking her out, but people aren't actually voting her out. So I think to have Kelly in the game as this giant distraction that focuses people's attention is really, really useful to him. And the fact that she doesn't get eliminated and then they kind of try to think of, well, who's the next one is also really useful to him. And I don't, you know, right. Would you agree with that?
I just feel like it's early. I mean, I think that the way that I would play this is that I would want to keep Kelly around for as long as I possibly could.
Why? I mean, just because she'll always be a target. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think like she's always a target. I mean, I do think that there's a chance, like I was saying before, that having Kelly in the game hurts David's game because it inhibits him from really blending into the rest of the tribe. Mm-hmm. While there are multiple returnees, he's never going to be able to sort of get out from that mantle. Can he ever get out from that mantle anyway? You know, I mean, people have done it, right? Penner. I mean, maybe Matt Penner, maybe Scoopin. Did it?
Did what?
Yeah. you know, was able to be more of just a player in the game and not a, like, this is the huge threat returnee that, we have to get out.
Yeah, you know, Kelly's reputation has really preceded her. It does not seem like that David Wright's reputation, whatever it is with this group.
How is that possible, though? Like, how are people sleeping on David? That's what I just don't get.
I think that that David Wright just came from a season where there were so many big personalities between your, you know, Hannah and Zeke and Jay and Adam and Brett and you know, just a big season, and I think that there was like that cast was more of an ensemble than a cast like Survivor Second Chances, which had basically, you know, Jeremy and Kelly as like the big stars that people cared about in the season.
I got more confessionals than I think either of those. just FYI.
Yeah, but she came off of that season, and I think that she was like one of the big stories. She was like the you should have won person, and right. I think that really ended up sticking in people's minds more so than David did.
Which is crazy because, you know, there's an argument to be made that Kelly might have won if she'd gotten to the end. David definitely would have won.
Yeah. Well, for whatever reason, and David set up really well with this group that we saw him really bond with Rick
Devins,
with Devins that made a, you know, big a deal with him to have Devins can vote him out at the final four.
That's a really fun alliance.
Yeah, they're very fun, and that Dave did a good job of identifying Wendy. Like he had that conversation last week where she's like, "Hey, I'll never vote against Reem," and David's like, "Hey, I gotta keep somebody like this around."
Yeah, yeah. So, do you think that ended up paying off dividends for Wendy?
I do think that there is something there. I mean, nobody's looking at her as she's not schemy. No, that she wasn't even really on the table tonight.
Well, she was still their default.
Wentworth was still pushing the Wendy narrative, but that basically like that the whole David side, and then War Dog ultimately came around on her. She's good in the challenges.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm saying she was still the other name that they wrote down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it shows she's very disposable to the tribe, right? The safety vote is not someone who you value.
Mm-hmm. What can Kelly Wentworth do here now, Stephen?
Yeah, I really am curious. I'm so curious to hear exit interviews to find out what she is doing. You know, why is she in this position where, yeah, I know. It's such terrible. It's so sad.
Sorry.
Where everyone kind of wants her out. And, you know, the only people are either going to keep her because she's a shield, or they want her out because she's, you know, a threat. But other than Lauren, we don't see people who actually want to work with her.
You know what I thought was so interesting was when Kelly Wentworth said, okay, look, Wendy is the target. We need to go out and all form an idol search party because she's going to go out there and she's going to find the idol and then she's going to get the jump on us. So we need to go out there and prevent that. And I just think it's such an interesting, like, human
reversal
thing that you know, you basically like accuse people of the kind of thing that you would go do.
She's
really like projecting like her own Survivor backstory onto Wendy of like, yes, I've been in her position. If that was me, I would go find the idol and then I would go, you know, write down Andrew Savage's name and then be able to pull off a complete blindside on the tribe.
Yeah, exactly. And then it ends up being her young protege who actually pulls it off.
And I thought that was so interesting that she's like, I'm not going to share this with Kelly.
Kelly wouldn't do it.
Kelly is my idol, but she will not get my idol.
Yeah, but she's playing it as Kelly would play it by not telling Kelly.
Yeah, she's that the student has become the teacher.
Or just still the student, you know, doing the things the teacher taught her to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that she will reverse course on that?
I don't know. No.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you?
It's early. It's early. You know, it's hard to keep a secret for a long time on Survivor. You know, easy to keep a secret the day of, but you know, sometimes you get bored.
Kelly Wentworth did it. She, you know, did probably what, like 13 days.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Keith. Do you feel like that he was unfairly targeted by the group, Stephen? Like
18 days. No, I mean, I think that he was probably the right choice, right? Like, he was already sort of on the outs with them. He did do really badly in the challenges. You know, I think there is a case to be made for that tribe that we're getting smoked in the challenges. The other tribe has Joe. Like, we have to, there's got to be some deference paid to challenge strength.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was never really with that major group to begin with. And I think I think that the idea of keeping Wentworth around as a shield is a good one. So I think Keith is probably, and keeping Wendy around is a good idea because, you know, the only person who really hurts from Keith getting voted out is Chris, just because, mm-hmm. Purple Chris. I think you call him Purple Chris, which because he is the only one who Keith has pledged loyalty to. Mm-hmm. Just like, right, any decision is good for some people and bad for other people. The decision to vote Keith out, I mean, do you think that it was unfair?
No, I don't. That he reminded me of you tonight in the episode when he said they asked him about like, hey, you know, boy, Keith, that performance, that was a disaster. And he said a line I believe you have said. Hey,
no, it was. Yeah.
A ring toss will not define my Survivor game.
Yeah, no one's getting voted out because of the ring toss, he said. No, I was feigning total confusion when you said he was like me, because of course I too have had my share of challenge screw-ups.
I believe that you've had that as an exact quote.
Yeah.
You were like, yes, but,
yeah, but it turned out he was wrong.
The ring toss did define his game. Yeah, I thought that was so odd, though, that he got put into the ring toss. I get that he struggled with the swimming, but I thought that was such a crazy choice of, okay, Chris, you come out. And it didn't seem like it was the kind of thing where if you land one, then you have to come out, because Joe took multiple tosses. It seemed like Chris made multiple tosses. Don't you think that was really bizarre that Keith ended up being put in the spotlight there?
My thought, you know, those challenges, it's such a mess of confusion, mm-hmm. right? Everyone is shouting, do this, let me in. Like, I'm like, put me in now. Like, it's my turn. Like, I want to, like, I thought maybe, you know, maybe Chris missed a couple that we didn't see. Keith wanted to step up. Like, that was my thought. Said, yeah, because, like, maybe he felt bad about the swimming and he was like, this is the way I can redeem myself. And then obviously he didn't redeem himself, but like, that was my thought, was that he was trying to step into a hero position.
The one thing that crossed my mind, is there any possibility, did anybody on that tribe want to go to tribal council that night? Was there any, was the Wentworth, like voting out Wentworth talk heating up? Was there anybody that might have wanted to go home? I mean, we saw this in Ghost Island where there was the challenge that Dominic threw. Right. And I think it also ended with a ring toss also.
Oh, yeah.
It turned out that I think that it was that Dominic was actually doing really bad, and Donathan was actually good at it. But do you think there's any possibility that was going on? That somebody was like, all right, Keith, you get in there.
I don't see really who that would benefit. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Kelly's worried, right? That Wendy's going to pull something together and it's going to be her. Wendy's worried. You know, I don't really see David
intentional
making that
Matt
play.
Singh.
I don't know. I don't think so. Who's making that play on that tribe? Like, you know,
the War Dog.
War Dog. Yeah. I do not see the War Dog. Does that benefit the War Dog? That does not benefit the War Dog.
Yeah. Steve, at the end of that challenge, and we haven't talked about comma yet, which I know you're such a big fan of punctuation, so that must be one of your all-time favorite tribes, that Joe was, you know, hitting the rings, and then they got down to the last one. Joe took himself out, had Eric do it, and I'm not sure if we have this this tweet tonight, but somebody on my Twitter feed asked, do you think that Joe pulled himself out because then let Eric hit the last shot, that as a way to defuse the target on Joe?
I do not. Nobody is thinking like, oh, who hit the exact last shot? That person won the challenge for
you. Don't
like,
think so? You don't think it's like where the other tribe looks over like, oh man, the Joe did it again. Like when they look over, they see that somebody else hit the last shot.
Wait, you're blind until the last 5 seconds of the challenge. You see Joe. If Joe really didn't want to like put himself in that position, then he wouldn't have like made the other seven of eight of them. You know, I mean, maybe he would have done two or three. My thought was,
I think
he's
smart.
Maybe.
Well, you don't want to give Joe credit, or you don't think it?
No, I always want to give Joe credit. That's why I'm hedging here. Yeah. You know, I want to give Joe credit.
I don't know. I mean, it feels like a little thing that he could do. It looks like they're definitely going to win. Why not let the other guy take the last shot? It's like if me and you are playing pool and
right.
I knocked
like
in
who
all
gets the winning.
And I knocked in all the balls and I'm like, all right, let me let Steven hit the eight ball in so they don't think that I'm that good.
Yeah, you could be right. I mean, you could be right. Like, let's have someone else kind of be in that hero spot so that it's not as much about me. But again, like,
Jeff's gonna be like, Joe, oh my God, Joe wins it for Makama
right,
again.
Right.
Joey, amazing.
I guess that's possible. I mean, that's interesting. Like, I was, you know, dead set against that interpretation when we started this conversation, and now. Now you've somewhat convinced me.
Wait, let's talk about that group because Aubrey got a rough go of it, I thought, tonight where, Aubrey, I don't think was doing anything wrong. Like, I think she kind of got like the dodo edit tonight of, oh, look at Aubrey. She's giving the same spiel to everybody. But I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with that. I think it's just that these players happen to be pretty, you know, sharp for these first time players.
Well, what I'll say that I think there were two things that she did wrong, right? And the first is that, you know, I think when you're a new player playing with other new players, or when you're a vet playing with other vets, you're not going to be necessarily the topic of conversation in the same way mm-hmm. that you're going to be when you are a captain playing with almost all new players. And so just she should know that given that she is in this captain position, she is going to... They're going to be talking about her. They're going to be comparing notes about her, just inevitably. And as a result, I do think that using some of the same lines and the same tactics, you know, I think what makes really effective survivor bonds is trying to find a unique relationship with each person, right? Is trying to like connect with each person on what on the thing that connects the two of you. And I do think that there's something a little bit sales pitchy about saying to the same person, you know, to each different person, the exact same thing. You remind me of me, you know, I mean, the dialogue thing, like whatever, like people have their idioms, people have their word choices, mm-hmm. you know? So like to say, like, let's keep a dialogue open to multiple people. Like that doesn't seem that crazy to me. But like the, you remind me of me thing, like stuck out a little bit.
Yeah. I feel like it was a little unfair to Aubrey where
oh, yeah.
she said that, like if she said that to each person once over the first 6 days, like it's a good opener. I can't come down that hard on her. I felt like that, you know, with the way it was presented in the supercut, super entertaining, really well done by the show. But she wasn't like having the thing where she's like, all right, here's the plan. Okay, this is our final four, and we're voting out this person. She really was just like opening up a literal line of dialogue with everybody in the group. And yeah. you know, I think that Joe, you know, by comparison, is doing better because he's seemingly doing nothing strategic.
We've seen basically nothing of Joe. I mean, but I will say that like
less might be more with the returning players.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, you know, but to, you know, Victoria had a confessional, like Aubrey's trying hard and doing a great job, but you know, we see through it. You know, I didn't think it was such a damning. I mean, yes, it was like very funny and, you know, a little bit like mm-hmm. Dodo edit-ish. But I think, yeah, on the fundamentals, it wasn't necessarily that damning. You know, someone has a confessional saying that she's playing a smart game. And, you know, until everyone compares notes about you to about her, she seemed to be doing okay.
Do you think that Aubrey is a little desperate because there does not seem to be a
natural connection?
No. An obvious boot here in this group where that you had Reem and you had Wendy and you had Keith, and there were people that were like obvious targets in that group because of the way that they were not really assimilating to the group as a whole. But there's not really that person who is that we're at least seeing, boy, that person's not pulling their weight. That person's not fitting in. If anything, we have not spent a lot of time with this group. And in both episodes, we've seen players talking about how Aubrey is the person they want to get rid of.
Well, what about Julie? I mean, Julie seems like an obvious person who might not be fitting in. You know, I feel like, you know, you could slice and dice it many ways.
So you feel like Julie's not fitting in? Why?
No, I think Julie is fitting in. I'm just saying that, like, you know, we've seen so little of that tribe. There are people who are going to be outliers that we're just not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can always find a way to target someone, you know, with right? Like, I mean, I guess Reem was more extreme than others are. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you're right. I think having someone who everyone could agree was sort of a clear first boot really helped the returning players on the blue tribe get in good with their tribe mates and give them opportunities for some bonds. The other thing is, you know, a lot of it just seems like who these people are fans of. You know, Lauren started the game a Kelly fan. I'm assuming Rick was a David fan. You know, Rick is a Survivor fan. He's tweeted about liking the nerdy players. I'm assuming he was a fan of David's. You know, I'm sure, you know, we had Aurora on the Comet Tribe talking about how dreamy Joe is, you know, and everyone talking about how they're such a huge Joe fan. And it's possible that Aubrey just got unlucky, that there's no Aubrey fans on that tribe.
You think that they put a bunch of Michelle fans on the Comet Tribe? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, that they just, you know, only give us a couple minutes, but what we have to operate under the assumption that they're showing us the most important minutes that have happened in that 3-day episode cycle. And
right.
Just a lot of talk about Aubrey. Now, again, the thing in her favor is that her tribe is strong. They're going to sit out two people out of the next challenge, and these things can snowball. So that I think that she may not have to go to a tribal council in the near future.
Yeah. And, you know, things change so fast, too. You know, it's like the tribe hits like somewhat arbitrary consensus in the first couple of days. You know, 3 days later, that's totally shifted. Someone does something stupid. Someone screws up in a challenge. Someone says something rude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing is different. So it really is just sort of like looking for those moments. What do you think? What is Aubrey's move here? Let's say she can sense, you know, she sees Ron in the water with Julia and Victoria, and she's like, oh, they're probably comparing notes. What does she do?
There's a lot of questions that I have, like, what is the status of Aubrey and Joe? I mean, I talked about how we haven't seen David and Kelly. Are Aubrey and Joe on the same page right now? That's really interesting. You know, we really saw almost nothing from Joe tonight. I'm not sure if Joe got a confessional in the episode tonight. So we just have no idea what he's thinking in terms of the game. So if they're on the same page, maybe they could work together. We don't know. If it could be everybody against Aubrey, or maybe she has like a couple people to work with. It's tricky.
Yeah.
But she's doing too much. I think that's the message that we're seeing right now. And it seems like that by comparison, Joe, who's doing almost no strategizing, that the conversations that Aubrey is having is coming off as more threatening.
Right. And that's always going to be the danger for Aubrey, is because she's known as this strategic player, she really has to sort of correct for that. And, you know, maybe, you know, like you're saying, like what she was doing, like, let's have a conversation. I really like you. You know, let's keep the line of dialogue open. You know, you're like me is a little bit much, but even that is like, you know, you're trying to find commonalities with someone. You're like me, you know? So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, some, you know, it's like a lot of it is just you play the game and bad things happen.
Okay. We got to check in with Reem tonight. She doesn't seem like she's holding up too great on Extinction Island.
Yeah, brutal. I mean, did this make you, this really sold, this brief 30 second clip of Reem really sold me on Extinction Island?
You're into it.
I like it because it's a different take, you know. I like seeing the person really struggling, you know, and I don't think I would want every survivor to have Extinction Island, but I like this one having Extinction Island.
I'm not mad at it yet. It's, you know, nothing has happened with Extinction Island that, you know, I've thrown anything at my television yet. So I'm fine with it. I love Reem. I was very happy to see like annoyed Reem there at Extinction Island. So it was fine. Hope she's doing okay.
I am curious to see what happens. You know, we don't really know what's going to happen when someone else is voted off. Like, presumably they're going to Extinction Island, you know, the same place. They're going to live with Reem. I think that will actually be less fun. Like, I sort of like the individual struggling alone.
Yeah,
but obviously you need the sort of endless. You need multiple people to create some drama.
I was getting a little tickled by the idea that if Kelly was going to be voted out, which it looked like that the story was leaning that way, with just Kelly and Reem on Extinction Island together, that I think that would have been high comedy.
Yeah. How close do you think that was? Do you think that was really,
to me,
near miss?
It seems like that Chris was the swing vote. And we haven't talked about him. I thought he had a really, really good episode, Chris.
Yes.
We saw that conversation where Keith comes to him and says, like, hey, I'll never turn against you. And Chris is like, oh, man, I got to keep that. And you had the five votes. You had David, Devins, you had Wendy, you had David, Chris? Devins, Wendy, Keith, and then Chris would have been five. And then yes. I think that Chris was really the person who ultimately did not want to turn his key. The war dog got to him and said, hey, we gotta don't worry about Kelly. She's not going anywhere. She's going to keep us safe. And I think that was enough for Chris to back out of the plan. It didn't happen because of Chris.
Yeah, I think that's probably likely. I think that is probably kind of where it came down. So, fishy for War Dog.
Fishy for the War Dog, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it was interesting how the episode ultimately presented that Keith was going to go home. We didn't really see anything about Keith up until the challenge. And then after the challenge, we got the confessional, which is, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's high, that it's the red herring of we lost the challenge, so I guess that's it for Wendy tonight. But we got exactly War Dog laid out I'm tired of, Wentworth or War Dog or Wentworth or Wendy. Too many W's on this tribe. How about Plan C? I'm ordering off the menu. How about Keith is the person that needs to go home?
Well, it was smart. This is what we expect from the War Dog, sort of out of the box thinking.
Yes. Yes. They don't call him the War Dog for nothing. The Art of War Dog. Okay.
The Art of War Dog.
Okay. And he got the fishy tonight.
Yeah.
Okay. Good for the War Dog.
Who gets the cesty?
Yeah. Is that really even a thing?
There's very rigorous rules, and if you don't abide by the correct cesty rules, I'm turning the internet mobs on you.
Yeah, but this is like I don't really do an award, and you're saying that I have to.
That's the way I feel. You're saying I have to give it to a real person and not an inanimate object or a force of will.
You know what? You could do whatever you want.
That's all I've wanted. That's all I want for my life.
Give it to Extinction Island. Give it to the ring toss. Whatever you want. I just like to hear why. That's all.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Let's
get to the questions.
It's the War Dog this time.
Okay.
Kelly Campbell wants to know, why do you think the Wentworth blindside?
Now, is that are we doing the Wentworth now?
I know. Wentworth. Why do you think the blind side of the Wentworth fell apart? I wanted to see the Wentworth and Reem stuck on that island together.
Well, as we were discussing that, I think that the War Dog convinces Chris that we need to keep her around, that she's going to be a shield for us down the road. Do you think, Stephen, that is that thinking sound, or is it faulty of that? Hey, there's going to be a swap and maybe she gets voted out instead of us.
Well, episode three is often when there's a swap. I do not think there's going to be a swap, and they don't know that there's the Island of Extinction. In my mind, they want to show viewers what's happening at the Island of Extinction. That's going to take airtime that you wouldn't necessarily give to, or that would otherwise be taken with a swap and, establishing these new tribes and these new relationships. My guess is there will not be a swap on the next episode. Or even at 15, which would be the other time that there could be a swap.
I do think that there will be a swap at 15.
You think? Yeah, actually, I was going to take that back. I think it's 15. It is possible there will be a swap at 15.
Because as you pointed out, we talked about this on the This Week in Survivor podcast this week, that you went back and you looked at that clue that Ron Clark had, correct? And you said that the actual paper
first three tribal councils
was the certificate. So it's not like he gets it and then he will have a choice. And if he doesn't use it this week, it's moot, right? Yeah. This upcoming
this is the
episode.
Last time.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, and there actually have been no rewards to steal. So, except I guess they've won rewards with the challenges. I think a swap at 15 is actually very possible. So I will take that back, but not next. But anyway, it's reasonable for them to think that a swap is upcoming. To think about how they're going to be protected
following
in a swap.
Episode number 3, not this upcoming week. That's what.
Oh no, I think it's reasonable for them to think that there will be a swap, possibly even in the next episode. I think that there will probably be a swap episode 4 or later. What were we talking about?
is there
line of thinking? I think there's a lot of validity to it. If you're like a guy like Wardog and a big guy like Chris, you want someone like Wentworth in the game.
I'm trying to think, if you end up with it would be a very specific scenario where that you'd have to be swapped somewhere and you, in the minority, and then in a tribe of 5, it's like War Dog and Kelly Wentworth get swapped to a tribe of 3 of them of the comma people.
Well, the other thing is,
and then you hope that they get rid of her before they get rid of you.
Yeah, but having Keith around doesn't help them, really. It helps Chris. Again, it helps Chris, but because he's someone who's going to be super loyal to Chris. But abstractly, having Kelly as a way to take attention off of them, and even just generally focusing attention on the vets, right? The longer Kelly is in the game, the more Joe is a threat, the more Aubrey is a threat. I think is positive for all of those people.
Yeah. If I was one of the new players, though, I'm not sure. I feel like that if I'm David, I think I would try to keep Kelly around as long as I could, because that's a shield for me. But
David is not a new player. Oh, you are. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. But if I was a new player, I think I would want to get that avalanche going of let's get out the returnees, because I feel like that buys me some time.
Right. Right. That's interesting. That's sort of. So the counter argument is you take out Kelly, and then it becomes in All-Stars when they're voting out the winners. And that becomes a kind of defining ethos of the season. We're getting out these people now. That's an interesting wrinkle.
But the thing is that, for War Dog and Chris, I think that they're also looking at it from the challenge strength, where it's like, hey, we got to stop the bleeding, and we can't go. We're going to get pagonged here if we end up going to all these tribal councils. The other side is so strong. We're going to get all picked off because we don't know the returning players. We don't know the other people. They're just going to knock us out if we don't take Keith out this week. So keep
right.
Kelly.
I mean, I really just think they're hoping for the marginal decision, right? If there's a swap and they're swapped with Kelly, then Kelly's going to be a bigger target than they are. If there's a swap and they're swapped with Keith instead of Kelly, I don't think that's so crazy. If you're someone who, like the War Dog, is going to be a bigger character, you're a large guy, you're going to be maybe a bigger target. It makes sense to keep threats in the game. I think that's pretty decently, established now, post Meat Shield Jeremy, post, Tony keeping Spencer around. So that seems like a not a bad decision on his part.
Okay. This is a question from Elias. Does Keith maybe think it's a trick question? Do you think that Keith is reading too much into this, Steven?
I kind of thought maybe he was. That was my thought too, Elias, that, your brain is frazzled. You're presented with this either or, and you're like, either or, you're not even necessarily thinking. It's really,
is it a riddle? If I leave, if I say I want to quit the game, do I actually get to stay? If I say I want to stay in the game, I'm actually leaving.
I thought, it's funny. I had the exact same thought, that he's clearly thinks there's more to this question than there is, which is just go left for your second chance. The go right thing, don't even think about that. We shouldn't have even, we made a mistake even putting that sign there.
Okay. What about this question from Wyatt?
Wyatt wants to know, is my main man Rick Devins guaranteed to win since Jeff is calling him by his last name?
The Devins thing kind of came out of nowhere. Because Cochran won and then called him the last name. I don't know if there's a great history of, if you get called by your last name, you win.
Yeah, I got Fishback. Wentworth was Wentworth. A lot of the last namers, we don't make it. We don't, Colby Donaldson is the classic one, he didn't win 3 times.
Yeah. I do think it's a thing that more common with a returnee. I mean, Cochran asked for it his first time out, but that in terms of like Donaldson wasn't Donaldson until he played the second time. I don't think Wentworth became, you know, there were two Wentworths the first time around.
Wigglesworth and Wentworth. Wait, two Wentworths, right? Dale Wentworth, right? Dale and
okay. This is a question from Darren. Why don't they show us who voted for who at the end? Should that be who voted for whom, Stephen?
It would. Yeah, invalid question, Darren.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't notice that. I hadn't gone back and looked for it, but you know, we get a little bit of a different format this season where we follow the POV of the person who ends up being voted out, and I do kind of like that. You know, you saw Keith like walking off. It's like, dang. You know, that's kind of unique. We haven't really gotten that in all the seasons of the show. And, you know, it's a lonely walk down that path after your torch gets snuffed.
Yeah, it really is. It's actually not that bad. It's actually kind of fun. You know, like that's like the you're still in the, like in your mind, you're still in the game. Like everyone, you know, you're having your exit interview, you're getting your medical check. It's like still all about you. It's not that lonely.
For a minute.
It's like the next, the next day is really lonely.
Because we don't even get Jeff saying like, all right, well, whenever it's a blind side, like it's not a, somebody's going to be on the business end of it. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
It was great. Can we talk about Keith's parting words, which were like, good luck winning challenges.
Yeah, like, oh, like, you're going to win challenges now without me? Like, you guys stink.
Yeah, and then it was funny, like, it was like, what? Like, he needs... I really liked
Keith. Very salty goodbye.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, I gave him the fishy last week. I really enjoyed him. I was hoping he would go far. Maybe he still will. But he needs to work on his zingers.
Well, he's got plenty of time to work on his swimming with Reem if he ends up to Extinction Island. They could practice that, you know, swimming. I mean, and then it would be a swimming challenge maybe to get back in the game and he could win.
That would be a great, that would be a real, you know, I want to address something. I kind of hit on this on Twitter. Yeah, I want to address something. I see a lot of people criticizing Keith for not being a better swimmer, but you know, they're like, oh, you know, you're going on Survivor. Like, how could you not learn to swim? It's not like you have, you know, 3 years to become a good swimmer when you learn. You know, it could just be a couple of months. You know, some people have a day or a couple of weeks from when they learn they're going on Survivor to when they're actually on Survivor. And even, you know, if you learn to swim and you didn't learn as a kid, you may not be a natural. I mean, you know, maybe he did take swimming lessons.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What are you on a big swimming thread?
No, I just don't want Keith being unjustly criticized, you know, as though like he didn't prepare accurately. As someone, you know, I tried when I was in the mix for Second Chances to learn balance. I went like every day to Dave and Buster's to like practice my hoops. My hoops were terrible. There was nothing I could do about my hoops, but I tried. I practiced.
You went to like the arcade and was like shooting baskets.
Yes, I was. That's like the appropriate training, right? Because they're all arcade games and it's all like, yeah,
that sounds really fun.
It's not fun because it's stressful. You know, you sap all the fun out of fun.
Yeah. Boy, did you get a lot of tickets?
No, that's the whole point.
Okay.
If I was winning tickets, I wouldn't have needed to go to Dave and Buster's.
Okay. All right. See, what about Will's question?
All right. Will Donaldson, know, considering Kama hasn't been to tribal council yet and Ron's idol menu is only good for one more tribal, do you think this idol menu will be put back out in play if Kama wins the next immunity challenge?
I don't think so. But would we have even seen it if it was just going to be a total bust?
I don't know. Probably because it's like something that happened at the thing. There's a little bit of drama to it. I mean, he'll use it for something, right? Like actually, that's a question. Let's say Kama wins the next immunity challenge. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Does it behoove Ron to at that point play it let's say there's a reward at the immunity challenge, like this challenge, should Ron play it to steal that reward with the knowledge? Oh no, because then they won.
Yeah.
So let's say Kama loses the next reward.
Should he throw the challenge his advantage?
The question I guess I'm trying to ask is it worse for Ron to play this reward challenge and make himself look schemey, like, oh, you hid this from us. Sorry, to play the reward steal than it is for him to actually steal the reward for his tribe.
Well, the question is, are we even going to have a reward challenge this week? Like, we might end up with the just the double immunity and reward. By the way, what a false choice. You want fishing gear or spices, Steven?
I disagree. I actually think, you know, that spices... So here's the thing about fishing on Survivor. If you've got someone like Ozzy out there, you know, maybe he'll catch enough fish to make it worthwhile. But there are very few people who are going to do that. You know, I was on a tribe with Joe and I did not like eat that many fish. You know, occasionally you'll have like a fish. I actually think the spices might be better in this situation, unless you really have a great fisherman.
Yeah, but what's in the Survivor spice kit? What's so great?
Turmeric. Anti-inflammatory.
Hey guys, I think we should go with the spice kit if there's turmeric in it.
I'm just saying, like, I don't think it's that much of a no-brainer. Yeah, like, you're not getting that much
call
fish.
Me
like, it's
turmeric
fun.
Devins.
The fish. I'm just saying, it's not such a gimme. It's not such a layup.
Like a Dave and Buster's. Okay. Yeah. All right. Then Hoodie Monsters. How has David managed to stay so far under the radar up to this point? Is Kelly that much of a bigger target than he is? I do think that David has done a really good job of being inconspicuous, where that, you know, David is, you know, he's not a big guy. He doesn't take up a lot of real estate. He sort of like, you know, doesn't carry himself in like a way that's like, you know, like craving attention. He's mild mannered and can be quiet. And so I think that he's very approachable.
Yeah. And, you know, you see him in these strategy conversations, just nodding and agreeing. You know, he doesn't ever like really force, you know, you rarely see him proposing his own opinions. One of my favorite moments in the episode was when Wendy was talking to, I think, Devins and David. And Wendy's like, we've got to get Wentworth out or else those guys are going to take over the game. And David's like standing right there. Like, she's talking about him. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of like gives it like a double take and doesn't say a thing.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to what we're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Okay.
That's why I share that anecdote, was that it spoke to what we're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Jazz Jubilee wants to know, how close were we to an actual Wentworth blindside tonight? Also, rip Keith, but when will these survivors start taking swimming lessons before they play? Jazz?
Drag her, Stephen. Drag her.
It's a good question, but we've already answered it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Let's go to Felipe. How do you guys feel about the cliffhanger ending? Think that Keith is going to pass up a second chance? I said 99% he's going to go to Extinction Island. You take the over or under?
I take the over. I think it's 99.1%, Bob.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Johnny DeSvera, what good does it do David Wright's game to target Kelly so early? Doesn't he realize that without her as his meat shield, the other rookies will soon target him as the last returnee if she was voted out? I do think that this is a classic Survivor fable there, where, you know, you target the other returnees, you target the other winners, the other people that you feel like, okay, oh, if I just get rid of this person, then I'll be clear. And then it always ends up where then the people that are now coming for you.
It didn't really, right? With Tony and Sandra, I know everyone's like, well, you know, they took out Tony. Like, the winners weren't going to turn on each other. Then they voted out Tony because Tony started targeting Sandra. Sandra lasted like quite a bit, you know, after that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, but that did start going after the winners.
Yeah.
You know, I
mean, eventually. Not really. But it didn't seem like, you know.
No?
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, I hear you.
Yeah. Look, my philosophy on it is like, you know, threats need to keep the threats around as long as possible.
Are you just laying the groundwork for Robs versus Russells?
How many? I guess there's two Russells, couple of Robs.
A lot of Robs.
Yeah. I would go after the pawns. I would go after all of the people who are not the threats.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think keeping Kelly in the game is good for David ultimately.
Yeah. But you know, David's philosophy and Shannon Gates brought this up and did such a good job with this in the preseason, where she went back and you know, did a whole profile on David Wright and talked about how, you know, the way that David views the game, the key word for David Wright is trust, where David Wright looks at the game as people I trust versus people I don't trust. And we see David trusts trusts Devins. Rick? Now he trusts Wendy. He doesn't trust Kelly. And so that's an enemy for him. Even though that she has not come for him, he doesn't trust her, so she has to go. And so that's, you know, just interesting the way that he's looking at this.
Now, do you think there's any equity for David also in just being part of a plan to get out Kelly? You know, if he's like open, shows that he's willing to scheme with the new players to make a big move against one of the returning.
He's not shutting it down. You know, he's approachable.
But it also shows like he's more on their side than he is on her side, right? I'm sure like there's an inherent fear that the returning players are going to be together. But if he's like, oh, yeah, I'm up on taking Wentworth. Let's blindside Wentworth. Like, let's see where it goes. Then he is building that trust.
Yeah, I really do hope that we get some secret scenes tomorrow. And I'd love to hear more about what Kelly is thinking about David. And then also what David is specifically thinking about Kelly. And if we have maybe even I can pray to the survivor gods that we get a secret scene of them talking to each other. OK.
Oh, wow.
Let's see. Let's go to John Densford.
All right. John Densford wants to know, is that a total misdirect or should War Dog get credit for moving the vote back to Keith? What do you think?
I mean, I thought that everything was presented in a very logical sense. I mean, was anything out of order? Who knows? But it seemed like that it was going one way. And then we saw that conversation between Chris and the War Dog, and something that changed everything.
Yeah. This is an interesting question, Rob, from Paige. Who do you think is playing the best outgoing game, and who's playing the best under the greater game and under the radar game to this point?
How about Ron? How's Ron doing? Would you say is he outgoing?
He's good. Yeah, he's outgoing.
How about that dance, Steven?
I like Eric.
Is he under the radar?
Outgoing. Eric. Oh, I thought he was outgoing. Do you have to dance to be outgoing?
I'm not sure. Yeah, the Comet Tribe, we don't really know a ton about. I also think it bears noting that it's interesting because that these players did not see season 37 of Survivor. And then we had a lot of the same conversations that we had in David vs. Goliath about women looking for the idols. And Julie, you know, kind of put a finer point on it. It was actually Lauren that found the idol there, like her hero, Kelly Wentworth. And although... we saw the women of Kama talking about, hey, let's stop talking about the idol. Let's go find the idol.
Yeah.
A lot of misdirection also with who is going to find the idol, I thought.
Yeah, I really liked that scene because it was such a good reminder of how much real labor. You know, I think a lot of the times I think the Survivor producers in the last couple of seasons have sort of dispelled this sort of sense of like, well, someone walks into the woods, they're going out idol hunting and they find the idol. Why doesn't anybody else go idol hunting ever? And I think this really showed, you know, just how much work and luck goes into it. Virginia had a really fun, good quote about it. It's where it's like, every tree out here looks the same in every tree. Victoria, what's her name?
Victoria.
Okay, Victoria, shoot.
Second episode. Sorry.
It's late. Victoria had a great quote where... what is Muffin? Victoria had a great quote where... you know, she's like, every tree out here looks the same, and every tree out here looks like it could be unique. You know, so it's like everything out here looks like another funky tree. So it's impossible to guess, like, which, you know, I remember that very distinctly, being like, well, that's a clump of three palm trees, but that's like a bent over palm tree. You know, you just like see like difference and unique and sameness and everything.
Okay. All right. I think that we're good. If you want to, let's start to wrap things up. All right. So Scott St. Pierre, I have to say the birthday guy, Scott.
What?
St. Pierre, happy birthday, Scott St. Pierre.
We had a whole conversation earlier and no one said anything.
Sorry.
Scott, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Scott. So I think that I'm not sure. It was, according to Scott's research, this is the number one Stephen Fishback gif.
Stephen
crying. This one, Stephen...
Looking.
Yeah, what's the tweet where you use this one, Stephen, where you just turn your head and look?
I don't know.
Is that bagels?
Well, I'm telling you, my gift game is terrible.
To the office? Oh, my nose. That's a funny one.
That's great. The missing with the slingshot is the one that I see the most.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I'm breaking Martha's nose. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Marsha.
My God.
Virginia's nose. Okay. Yeah. RuPaul's Drag Race happening up on robhasawebsite.com. The cast preview for the RuPaul's Drag Race 11 is happening. They bang out those RuPaul's Drag Race seasons like nobody's business. There's like a day in between them. Bachelor 23. Bachelor Colton. What's he going to do next? Nobody knows. Go check it out with Amy and Haley and our Bachelor wrap up, of course. Another one of Steven's friends is Tyson Apostle. Do a podcast with him every single week, and Danny Bryson talking about everything going on over on News AF. Check that out in your Robinson podcast feed. And then Coach will join me tomorrow morning. Very excited to talk with Coach, ask him about what to do. How do you solve a problem like these rookies targeting vets? We'll ask Coach about that. Send in your emails if you have them for Coach. Survivor@robisawebsite.com for that podcast. And then Ali Lasher will be on the RHAP B&B. Steven, that sounds exciting, right?
I love Ali Lasher.
So that's going to be in our Rehap Ups feed. And then David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis will tell us why Keith lost this week on the episode number 2 of Why Blank Lost. And then Lyrsa will join me on the feedback show. Get your feedback questions in for Lyrsa. You can email. You can go to robisawebsite.com/voicemail or call us 323-282-RHAP for that. And then I will be back to play this week in Survivor history and go over the Survivor social media and more on our new weekly podcast, This Week in Survivor. Okay. Hold on. We have a late breaking question from Jeff Schwartz. I've been listening to RHAP since Nicaragua, but I've never left a voicemail. Tonight, I'm seriously considering a wand off because I had an idea and it was referenced on tonight's show. How long should it be and how do I send it? And I'm scared. Try to keep it about a minute and send it to wiggleroom@robhasawebsite.com. And I'll talk to Josh Wiggler on Monday and we'll go through everything in the week 2 wand off and hear everything that Josh Wiggler has to say about this week's Survivor. Steven.
Yes.
Of course. Hey, Steven, what's this all about?
Oh, my God. So the latest episode of Paraphrase, which is up now, is a really interesting book that I think actually a lot of you guys might like called American Spy by Lauren Wilkinson. And it's an updating of the spy novel. It's set in the 1980s and it follows this black female FBI agent whose career has kind of stalled out at the FBI because of some of the entrenched bigotry there. So she joins this shadowy operation to infiltrate the government of Thomas Sankara in Burkina Faso. And it's a really fantastic book. It's fast moving. It's super thrilling. I mean, the very beginning, like literally starts with a bang. So check that out on paraphrasepodcast.com.
Yes, guys, keep this up for a second, Stephen, that you rushed right into this, Stephen, in case anybody wasn't paying attention last week. What is Paraphrase Podcast?
Oh, that's very nice of you to ask. It is a podcast that I've recently started where I interview novelists about the openings of their books. You know, I'm an aspiring writer myself, and I noticed that there was no real podcast that kind of talked about books both thematically and then also kind of talked about some of the craft that goes into those opening few pages. And also getting kind of into how the authors got their start and their backstory. So since this, I figured like, oh, if it doesn't exist, and incredibly in 2019 there was still a podcast idea that didn't seem to exist, I might as well start it myself, because what people are clamoring for are more podcasts. So I've had some really incredible guests on, and my first one was with a real hero of mine, Jeff Vandermeer. So I was really thrilled about that, and Lauren too was a really fantastic guest and had some really wonderful insight.
Okay. Paraphrasepodcast.com.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that's for more Stephen Fishback, paraphrasepodcast.com. And then, of course, the way that all of these podcasts happen here on Rob Has a Podcast, robhasawebsite.com/patron, that the many great listeners of this podcast. Some of them even say, you know what? I'm so happy that this podcast exists. I want to make sure that this podcast keeps on happening. And so I will become part of the Rob's Podcast patron community. You can go to robswebsite.com/patron to find out more information. Last night we did our big monthly patron cast, 3.5 hours of calls from the Rob's Podcast patron, Stephen. Had a lot of fun there. Of course, we've got the patron only podcast feed and everything else that's going on there. robhasawebsite.com/patron. All right.
I got to say, Rob, like hosting a podcast, this thing that I do, one podcast every 2 weeks, it's a lot. Like just like keeping the conversation going, you know, asking questions, listening to people's answers, making sure you hit all your points. It's freaking hard. And the more I do it, the more like respect I have for you, just for how good you are at keeping interesting conversations going and at listening to people, asking the great, great questions. I mean, you're so good at this and you're doing like 60 of these a week. You know, I'm doing one every 2 weeks and it's like draining. I mean, in a good way, like I love doing it, but it's still like a lot. It's hard.
Well, the good, like anything, Stephen, the more you do it, the more secondhand it gets. And congratulations on passing a big milestone. I saw on Twitter that you got past 7 episodes, which they say in podcasting, that's really like there's a line in the sand that like 7 is the number that people quit. A lot of people start a podcast around 7s when it's like, is this fun? Is this a lot of work? I didn't think it was going to be so much work. Is anybody still listening? I'm just going to quit.
Yeah. And it is. And yeah, it's, but it just like, it continually just reminds me of how good you are at it, you know, and how we'll just how skilled you are.
Yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate you, Stephen. Okay. Yeah. All right. Great work here tonight.
Yeah, this is a good episode.
Yeah. We'll be back in the first week of March. What do you have something?
Yeah. We never talked about that seagull.
What seagull?
Oh, you missed the seagull? What, oh my God, it was the best part of the episode where Julie's giving a confessional about how she can't find the idol. And while she's talking in the background, like a gull swoops out of the air
and finds
grabs
the idol.
A fish. Yeah, finds the
flies
idol.
Away with it.
Flies away with it.
Yeah.
No, grabs it. It was crazy. Right. It's in the middle of this confessional.
Stephen, this might be meta, but will the new number one Stephen Fishback gif of all time be Stephen Fishback cleaning the camera lens?
It's my dream. Anything to replace anything from Cambodia is my dream.
All right. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre. Happy birthday. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
Special thanks to our friends over at True Car for sponsoring this episode of Rob Has a Podcast. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, that luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you save by riding your bike all summer long. While you can't put a price tag on your stories now with True Car, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell it or to trade it in. Just go to True Car and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof. Watch as they bump up your car's value. High mileage, you already knew it was going to cost you, but now you'll know how much it's going to ding your wallet so you can plan ahead. And once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you could take to a local certified dealer to cash out or to trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True cash offer not available in all areas.